last night. A vision. I saw a world full of people. Everybody was dancing and screaming loud. They were just there to listen to the music. It was deep. It was underground. Let's turn the world into a dance floor.
Are you guys ready for a state of trance? Put your hands in the air.
This is a State of Trance podcast.
Hey, what's up? Ruben de Ronde here for a brand new podcast. And what a pleasure it is today to have our guest Sander van Doorn here in the studio. How are you doing, man?
Couldn't be better. Perfect, yeah.
Yeah, well rested.
Well rested, yes.
No, you're not well rested. When he came in here to the studio, he was like, I only slept 2.5 hours last night because your little son was born, Jax.
Yes, just a few weeks ago. Yeah, yeah. So, he definitely keeps us busy during the night. He drinks a lot of milk. And so there's a lot of bottles also during the night. And it takes around 2.5 hours to get him asleep again. So,
But he's a little bundle of joy.
Oh, yeah, yes, definitely.
Awesome. Yeah. How's your daughter coping with everything?
Yeah, she's doing great, actually, with the new situation. She was testing me out a little bit at first to see if she's getting just as much attention as before.
Yeah.
So now she knows, she still does.
Would she walk by a table and just put a glass like... Boom, on the floor?
Yeah.
Really?
You clean it. Oops. She's quite naughty, actually.
Luckily, you have a studio where you can hide in a little bit sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's upstairs. So she can't go upstairs. So
that's a good thing. Yeah. Hey, I want to start at the very beginning. When did you start DJing, and what was the spark in you that you wanted to start producing? And you know, the little bit of a history of Sander, when Sander became Sander van Doorn.
Yeah. When I was 16 years old, I was at a birthday party of a nephew of mine, and he had to do Technics turntables with the mixer, and he was playing the raw hardcore style back in the days. So I gave it a go myself, and it worked out quite well already. So I borrowed all his records and started messing about a little bit at home.
Yeah.
And I bought my first turntables and started playing a little bit in a local pub when I was in college. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like the start for me. And also with producing at around 17, 18 years old, I really felt, found a joy in creating music. So I started, producing away, never really with the intention to send something to a record label, mm-hmm. Just for myself. But it kind of went out of hand. Did my first record deal, about 2 years later, I think.
Okay.
It was 2021. And then I switched labels to Spinning Records.
Mm-hmm.
Started producing a lot of remixes, a lot of aliases as well. Sam Sharp,
Sandler,
Of course, Sander van Doorn and Purple Haze. So produced a lot, did a lot of remixes, and then I got like my first bookings request sent to me by email from Switzerland. Can you play Sander? It's like,
sure.
I'm a DJ as well.
Yeah.
So I got my first booking, because of that. And things kind of snowballed quite quickly after that.
But first, you started out with playing hardcore. How you practiced.
That's how I practiced. But the funny thing was, I was buying hardcore records, but also loved to buy house records.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I just wanted to mix. So I put like a house record of 33 RPM to 45.
So you played it 150 RPM.
Yeah. So it was like this weird mix, and that's how I kind of got started. And also with going out a lot to a local venue called the Dance Salon.
Eindhoven.
In Eindhoven, where Marco V was resident, and that really sparkled for me the whole interest in combining house music with a little bit of techno and also trance, and kind of progress from there.
It's interesting. So when you started making music, because I'm looking at myself right now, I started making music maybe just around the same time as you, maybe a little bit later, but the influence is always hardcore.
Yeah.
And so the first tracks that you make, was it also hardcore? Or was what was it?
No, not really, actually. When I started producing, it was more more trancy, but yeah. also always with kind of like a housey groove to it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But I never actually made a hardcore track.
No. You should try it, man. It's fun.
Yeah. I've done a few hardstyle tracks. One together with Frontliner. Mm-hmm. And it was really fun to do as well. It's like it's kind of like a way to get your energy out in the studio. And I really love doing that. I've always really loved doing strange new things and. Mm-hmm. And really, getting out of my comfort zone to try out something different. And you always take it back in the studio producing your own stuff as well.
Especially, I think when I look back at your older tracks, when I was looking at this interview, one of the tracks that really stood out for me is definitely outside of the box was Grasshopper.
Grasshopper, yeah.
That was in the Border Community times, I think.
Yeah, yeah, that's
Were
right.
you inspired by that?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I was, James Holden fan.
Yeah.
And Nathan Fake and, the Outhouse track they produced and the Nathan Fake remix. Oh, that was
that's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, so I started buying all the vinyls of Border Community. Mm-hmm. And I was in the studio messing about a little bit with a new synth, and at one point I was like, "Yeah, why not?"
Sustain the
yeah. Working on a new version of Logic, which gave which had the Space Designer.
Okay,
so you could make a sound that was really mono, and you could really stretch it out to stereo by using that special verb, and that's kind of like the basis of Grasshopper.
So we're just trying around some sounds, and then opening up.
Yeah, it's a simple melody, dum-dum, 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 dum-dum.
Yeah.
And small, bigger, back to small. Yeah, kind of like messing with that.
If you were to produce something like that right now, would it be a Son of a Dorn track or a Purple Haze track?
Yeah, wow. You know, that's the strange thing. It kind of was both a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the basis, it was quite Son of a Dorn. Mm-hmm. But with the whole spaciness, it was more Purple Haze. That also made it for a lot of DJs harder to understand when they were used to my Son of a Dorn stuff. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden there was Grasshopper.
Yeah.
They were like, what is this? This is strange. But a lot of techno DJs started playing that track.
True.
So so that's funny. So I would say perhaps a little bit more Purple Haze.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
I think so too.
Definitely.
Well, we go back to the period where you started releasing Purple Haze records. That was 2005 was the first one, Adrenaline.
Adrenaline, yeah.
And before that, you had your Son of a Dorn stuff already?
Yeah, already.
Where and how did you decide that you want to do more different aliases?
Well, for me personally, when, it was still in a time where I went to the record shop buying a lot of tracks and, mm-hmm. If he were friends with the right salesman, you got all the right records and they knew, I was a big fan of techno, but also house and trance and all these different kind of sounds in between. So I always got like a stack of very diverse styled, records, mm-hmm. Which also included the whole Border Community tracks. So I guess, the sound like James Holland and Nathan Fake did sparked Purple Haze for me as well.
Okay.
As well as, listening a lot to bands like Sigur Rós and Radiohead. They always have like this moody kind of melody. Mm-hmm. And that combines kind of like made for a perfect Purple Haze sound.
Yeah. And how do you decide then in the studio? Even back then, because back then you even had more aliases.
Yeah.
How did you... start a track out with a sort of a template. Now, I'm going to work on Sander today. I'm going to work on Sam Shard today. I'm going to work on Son of a Dorn today. Or is it something that just comes organically?
Yeah, definitely. Because, I can say to myself, I'm going to produce a Son of a Dorn track. Mm-hmm. But then, you're kind of like searching for sounds and kind of stack based on a kick. And sometimes it gets a little bit more moody. Mm-hmm. Other times get a little bit more, cheerful or more housey. Mm-hmm. And it kind of progresses from then on. Sometimes a Purple Haze track in the basis has a pretty housey beat. So perhaps I was thinking about making a Son of a Dorn track, and then all of a sudden it turned out to be a Purple Haze track, like Blixen.
Yeah,
a good example of that. And that's basically it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, going back even further now.
Okay.
Because how do you come up with a name like Purple Haze?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was actually one of the first times I came to Amsterdam.
Ah, that's why. Now yeah. I know. Go on.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was walking by this this coffee shop and, you know, they had like the menu card in the window. And I saw like Purple Haze and I was like, oh, yeah, that's a Jimi Hendrix song as well. It's like, yeah, it kind of like, you know, grasped the whole sound, you yeah. know. With the stuff I was doing, because, you know, I had adrenaline, but didn't have a new, you know, alias for that. So it was around that same time. So I was like, you know, Purple Haze kind of fits adrenaline, mm-hmm. you know, with the whole sound and, you know, the whole fuzziness. So let's just go to Purple Haze.
So it's named after walking by a coffee shop, you saw the name of a joint.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, and here's a pretty funny story as well. You know, I started playing with Purple Haze as well a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just to be sure, I copyrighted the name for me to use as a, you know, for DJing. And then we had an email from the lawyer of the family of Jimi Hendrix asking me to stop using that name.
What?
Yes. And we said, well, actually, it's registered, so we can actually use it. And then they were like, oh, yeah, but...
Well,
you know, yeah. So we kind of made a deal. So I can use the name and they have, you know, the rights for that particular name.
That's crazy. So for yeah. a track title, they registered the name. No one else can use Purple Haze.
Luckily
you already registered before that.
Yeah, yeah, it was before that. So it was the family, you know, working still with... I would say the estate of Jimi Hendrix, and,
yeah.
and I don't know what they did all over those 30 years, but they forgot to register the name.
Oh no!
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So maybe if that was a thing, you would have gone to, I don't know, court or changed your name into what other names are there? Black Widow or something like that. There's other weird names.
B-52. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. That's crazy, man. Yeah, that's a good story. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so now everybody's happy, so that's great.
I would have been shook, to be honest, to get an email in from the lawyers of Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, we were quite surprised. I was so what are we gonna do now? So, well, just, you know, let's be honest about it. It's registered.
Mm-hmm.
So it's two words. It's Purple and it's Haze. You can use it in all sentences. And we combine it and registered it. So that's how it went about.
That is insane. There was also the question from Scotia Rose 48. What inspired the name Purple Haze? Well,
there you
Sander
go.
Walking around in Amsterdam.
Yeah, there you go.
Grabbing in another question from a listener before we go on. DJ Meridian wants to know, what kind of music do you listen to at home besides kids songs? Your Spotify rep must be interesting.
Oh, man, yeah. Well, I was just saying it. We use the one account for, you know, the whole family. So sometimes you have like your daily mix and you have like a very moody track or a more, you know, deep housey kind of track for during the day, mm-hmm. Followed up by Baby Shark, you know, and it kind of keeps on going like that. So I listen to a lot of kids' music. Besides that, just like playlists from Spotify, just to chill out, and you know, still love listening a lot to Sigur Rós, mm-hmm. kind of like bands like that.
So
like,
very moody music.
Very moody music, that definitely.
Is that something you listen to in the morning or in the evening?
It's definitely not in the morning. No. It's more of, for me, it's more a weekend kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because it can also inspire you to when you go into the studio. Well, everything absolutely. Is going to be very. Yeah. Heavy.
It's not going to be a set of endorsements.
No, it's only going to be Purple Haze.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Next question I have for you. What is the weirdest thing that ever happened during a set? Purple Haze or Son of Norn, doesn't matter.
The weirdest thing? I had a couple of weird situations. One of the weirdest thing was actually playing in South Africa. And the venue made like a party comparable to the sensation parties in Holland, mm-hmm. where
the white parties,
the white parties where you had the center stage and turning around.
Mm-hmm.
And the only problem was it could only turn around in one direction, but they did something wrong with the power cable, so it kind of unplugged itself turning around. So all of a sudden, everything just stops, the music, lights, everything.
Oh, no.
So there was two guys unwinding the whole, the whole cables. Yeah. It took him about half an hour, just roll it up again and then switch it on. And then I could play again.
With a full dance floor.
Oh man, the atmosphere was killed around that point.
No. So
that was pretty weird.
How was your own mood when you did?
Yeah, it was pretty good actually. Yeah.
How do you start a set like that again?
Well, you have 30 minutes to think about it. Yeah. So, I kind of, went into a track I wanted to play next and, felt like, okay, this is a good one. I went into the breakdown and kind of started up from there and then, tried to win the people back again.
Oh, no. Unfortunately, yeah. I have some experiences like that. No, not on a massive scale like that, that you just stand in a venue that something just stops. Or I have emergency loops that I had in the past. When you used only one CD, one USB instead of two.
Oh my God, yeah.
That's why you should always take two.
I have four actually.
Really?
Yeah.
All four.
Yeah. I'm always with the new version of Rekordbox. I'm also a little bit afraid that something will go wrong. So I always lose two versions of Rekordbox. So it's a lot of uploading actually with four USB sticks.
Are you that much of a control freak?
I am. Yeah. Definitely. A little bit too much sometimes.
I wonder what your studio computer looks like. To be honest,
very neat.
Desktop is empty.
Yeah.
All right, okay. Another question. I already touched upon this on the regular episode of State of Trance because you started 2005 with Purple Haze, then you released until 2011. That was the last one.
Yeah.
And then 2017, you had a comeback. In these 6 years, does it mean you didn't listen to Sugo Rios at all?
Yeah, definitely. But I still listen to the same bands, but I really wanted to focus more on bringing everything back under one name, that being Sen of Andorran. Also with that, I felt like Sen of Andorran can also be quite diverse. I found after so many years that I couldn't be as diverse as I wanted to be. So it really did need, an alias in order to produce music in different genres and for everybody to understand, this is not a Sen of Andorran, this is something else.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, reviving Purple Haze was perfect for that.
I was really surprised when you started it again.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Because out of nowhere, I think you also sent some demos. The first release was here, right?
Niloy was the first release.
Yeah.
That was on Andorran.
Andorran, right? Yeah.
But one of the first, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the remix I did for Goose. Yeah. Call Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I was so surprised, like, really? Purple Haze? Sander is back making music like that again.
Yeah, it kind of felt a little bit like going back to the roots as well. With Sen of Andorran, I was also doing more melodic stuff and it really worked out in my sets.
Mm-hmm.
I really wanted to go back in depth with that. And also with Purple Haze, I can still be really diverse as well because some tracks are, a little bit more techy in the basses.
Mm-hmm.
And, other tracks are very, moody, more trancey, very much based on the melody. With Purple Haze as well, I can go into every single direction. But it keeps it clean for me as well with Sen of Andorran. It's like, this is, what I want to do with that.
Do you still have a lot of people that come to you like, I didn't know that you were Purple Haze as well?
Yeah, definitely. It's especially, at the first couple of shows, we really had to, get the people aware with the fact that, and Purple Haze is also Sen of Andorran. So a lot of interviews, a lot of press around that to make sure that people knew, I was, both the DJs. But still, I get it when people say, he looks a little bit like Sen of Andorran, actually. Or just the other way around.
Yeah. Well, you also have a lot of other artists or DJs that started an alias and then just put on a cap.
Yeah. Oh, well,
or a different
jacket.
Or like Armin just put on a monk suit.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well,
but when you're performing as Purple Haze, you don't have any gimmicks like that, or do you?
No, not really. No.
But is there a different preparation? Is there a different preparation in these two sounds?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I would say, Purple Haze sound is more a sound for bigger venues as well, festivals where, I really want to set a mood and really, tell a story with when producing or also with mixing the music. Whereas Sen of Andorran is a little bit more free, to go from one direction to the other. It's a little bit less preparation, but it's also it's more, you know, freestyling as well. So that's what I love with the Sand of Andorra.
It's more party mood as well.
Yeah, it's more party mood, definitely.
And more freedom. Also,
more freedom, more clubby. And so also, you know, better suited for the clubs. And Purpa is more, storytelling.
Interesting. Yeah. So the first part of the 2005-2011 period, your last one that you released was Time Zone, I think.
Time Zone.
And that was I think, one track a year. And then suddenly in 2007, you came back first with a full album. The album was out and the next releases just came in pumping like that.
Actually, Time Zone was Son of Norn.
Yeah, Son of Norn presents Purple Haze. So that was the transition period.
Definitely. It's strange. Sometimes you need to step back a little bit for a couple of years to really discover it and to get like this whole new load of inspiration. And I was quite happy to see that you know, I had this one idea after the other for you know, future Purple Haze tracks as well. So for me, that was quite an eye opener, definitely.
And I think it's also very different. It probably took a lot longer time and effort to make a record all the way in the past, 15 years ago, if you compare it to right now.
Yes, absolutely. You know, first of all, with the technology, obviously, these days it's a lot easier to get like samples to get started, you know, with splice and stuff. Music is more accessible with you know, Beatport and Spotify, and especially also with Shazam. I remember being in a record shop 20 years ago.
What's this track?
Actually singing the song I heard in the club. Down, down. I was standing there singing
Johnson.
It. Yeah, Paul Johnson, there you go. Yeah. And, you know, that was the way you got your records back in the days. And
At Rare Records, probably.
At Rare Records, in Eindhoven, yeah. And, these days, people have a lot more, you know, accessibility to the music and also to the samples. You know, the digital synths out these days are absolutely amazing. You know, Serum, C-Length, I love Massive, the new Massive X. And it makes it quicker to you know, work out your idea. But still, sometimes a track can take a long time still, definitely.
Are you a producer that works mainly on soft synths nowadays, or is it also still a little bit of hard synth, hardware stuff?
Well, you know, it's definitely most of it is digital these days, because the sound is pretty much equally as good as the hardware. And sometimes, you know, with digital you can even bring it further. But I still I love using analog when mixing down the track. I still use the TubeTech, the original one, you know, with the tubes. To do some multiband mastering. And also I have a really cool culture filter, is called.
It's down there in the studio as well. Distortion.
It's amazing. So you know, just to distort some sounds. It's also a stereo distortion, so just by, you know, distorting every single channel separately, also gives a lot more, you know, stereo effects.
I love that. There's also a software plugin for that, but the hardware is still
it's definitely better.
Is that also how you create that ridiculous low end that you always have?
That's actually a lot of, you know, focus, listening, and having a ridiculously large subwoofer in the studio.
I'm pretty sure your neighbors are very happy with that right now.
Not really, no.
Transcopedia wants to know, is there going to be another Dolby Atmos set like ADE 2019 in the future?
Definitely. You know, the only thing is, I used to go to the studios in London, as well as in the US, to do the mastering together with the engineer, because I didn't have the software myself. And right now I'm really looking into getting, you know, the wired headphones to do the mix down myself. So that's a big process, combined with, you know, the whole Corona situation. It's harder to get, you know, the whole thing done. But it's definitely something I want to do, keep on doing in the future.
Do you keep those kind of stuff in the back of your mind where you're making new music, like the stereo fields?
Yeah,
and
yeah, definitely. Especially where you go, have effect that goes round and round. Actually, the roundabout track, is a perfect example of going to, 3D in a club when the whole, thing goes berserk and it kind of goes into kind of like a tremolo. Mm-hmm. You can make it, completely 3D, and it's awesome to listen to in a club.
Now you can do a lot of stuff with the LFOs, of course.
It's phenomenal.
Insane. DJ Smil wants to know, what does trance mean for you?
Trance, it's been a big part of my life, especially the last 20 years. For me, it's trance means community. It means that, the fans I had in my early days are still, my fans and friends. I've met some amazing people and they still come to my shows. So definitely community. It's also a kind of the start for me, the spark of producing and becoming a producer myself and mm-hmm. later on a DJ. And it's also, re-sparked, the whole Purple Haze thing. So for me, trance is one of the biggest parts of my life, I would say, musically.
I like that one, community. Trance is community. I like that one. What was actually the spark that you started making Spectrum? Did you hear certain influences from people that you didn't expect, or that something must have sparked it that you came back to the studio and make Purple Haze stuff again?
Yeah, well, it started with producing the Neloy track, which I produced first, and then came up with the idea, why not, revamp Purple Haze, because I love producing this track and I feel like I have a lot more inspiration. So then I kind of ask myself, what would Purple Haze look like right now? And sound wise. So started messing about with a lot of different kind of sounds and producing different kind of tracks, like Out Here, like really moody, or Historia, which has kind of like two tempo differences in the track. Mm-hmm. So I started out trying all these different tracks just to get a grasp of what I felt like Purple Haze should be. But the great thing about producing all those tracks is you find yourself, actually, why not produce an album? And it makes it more easier that people didn't expect me to do Purple Haze. So people didn't expect me to release singles very quickly. So I could kind of spare everything up and really, come up with the perfect idea for me to do the whole album. So it starts with producing a lot of tracks.
So you're also allowed to work on that without any pressure at all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. These days as well, producing an album is very hard, in all different genres with mm-hmm. With dance music, because you don't want no singles to be released for a year. So you want to keep your singles out, but also, you would love to produce an album. The thing is, you release an album and within a few weeks, it kind of loses effect because everybody has listened to it, mm-hmm. On Spotify. So I would say the whole idea behind an album kind of changed a lot over the last years, the last 15 years actually. And so for me still is, if I do an album, it's because, I love doing an album myself, mm-hmm. but it's more of a personal thing, I would say, instead of, having something to, with my profile or anything.
Yeah, that's what I love about making an album as well, that you can put tracks on there that you wouldn't release as a single, because A&Rs or managers there wouldn't allow you to release something like that outside of the box.
They would say, for a single, it's weird, but, for an album, it's not weird. You can go into every single direction. Producing an album also makes you more versatile as a producer, mm-hmm. Towards the future, producing singles as well.
That's why I'm so sad right now that a lot of people are just focusing on singles alone, normal albums, because it's what you mentioned. If you release singles after an album is released, the singles from the album, Spotify or any portal is not going to do anything, because they'll say it's old.
It kind of stops, yeah. And then, people focus on a single again.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, yeah.
So that's why you can at least put some quirky stuff on
exactly.
on an album. Yeah. Hey, talking about an album, a question that came in through Twitter from Friendemex. When will the next Dust Till Dawn album will be released, or released, I guess? And will it have any Big Room techno tracks on there?
Dust Till Dawn, Dust Till Dawn was kind of like a DJ concept I used a couple of years with... Xenoph and Doran, you know, it kind of had it was kind of more like a touring kind of thing. So, you know, it had a start and had an ending. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't produce another Dustin Doran compilation album. And also with compilation albums, it's you're not really releasing anything on CDs anymore. So it's more the mixes you do online. They and also the live sets that get broadcasted online have a lot more effect, you know, for people to listen to mm-hmm. instead of doing an actual compilation CD. So for me, that really wouldn't work out.
How do you deal with another thing that you just mentioned? How do you deal with live sets being broadcasted? Because you do a Purple Haze show. I've seen the show. You put a lot of time and effort and a lot of money probably also in the visuals.
Yeah.
How do you keep those tracks fresh that not everybody's going to say, hey, but you play that set already?
Yeah. Well, it's actually producing a lot of tracks and also producing a lot of contents. And I have a great VJ who's a friend of mine who's always really eager to do different twists on the visuals mm-hmm. and trying out new stuff. And he's an absolute genius when it comes to the whole visual aspect. And for me as well, there's always a lot of pressure, you know, with sets being broadcasted to produce a lot of tracks and keep an eye out on a lot of tracks you love playing as well from other artists, as well as doing a lot of edits and you know, keeps you busy, definitely.
Keeps you on your toes.
Yes, definitely. Absolutely.
How did you cope with the last couple of months? We're already in here for 2 years already.
Yeah.
You did some shows already after that. Did you already do some Purple Haze shows after the lockdowns as well?
Yeah.
Or just Son of a Doran stuff?
No. Also Purple Haze did over in Croatia. A couple of months ago, as well as I think it was Poland. Mm-hmm. So Eastern Europe. I did a few Purple Haze shows. A lot of live streams, of course. Mm-hmm. And for the rest, was a lot of Xenoph and Doran shows actually, because you know with the Purple Haze shows, you actually do need a bigger audience, you know, to get the whole vibe and energy and the whole visual aspect going. So it was more small scaled Xenoph and Doran sets, because you know for promoters as well, it's very hard and tricky to start promoting something when everything's so uncertain.
True.
So but just every single show I can take is pretty much phenomenal.
Yeah, I agree, because people are really feeling it, and I hope that we can keep on going with these shows for a long time at least. Now Purple Haze is back. You brought it back, and you already mentioned it earlier, because I've been asking this, I don't know, every time when you're here in the studio, is Sam Sharp coming back, or is there any Sandler planned in the future as well?
I would say, focusing on Xenoph and Doran and Purple Haze, for me, it works out perfectly. Mm-hmm. I would say Sam Sharp was a sound that was really, set for that particular moment in time. Mm-hmm. I would say if Sam Sharp would be, revived around this time, it would actually sound more psytrancy, I would say. Mm-hmm. But I can't do too much.
No, I understand. Yes. And you have a lot of stuff coming as well.
And I have two kids at home as well, so yeah.
That helps.
Yeah.
Is there going to be a track named after Jackson?
Why not?
Yeah, probably.
Well, yeah, well, I'd have to name one after my daughter as well. So
you have to do it. It sounds like a good EP name.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we're already way over the time that we're supposed to talk. So thank you so much for talking with us today here in the podcast.
Yes, welcome.
Son of Norm. Thank you so much. Yeah. That was it for this year, the last podcast already of 2021. I hope you enjoyed all of them. My name is Ruben Ronde, and I'll see you next year for a new Estate of Trance podcast. See ya. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in. To check full episodes of Estate of Trance for free, simply visit armandradio.com. A State of Trance returns next week.